Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today we are going to talk to Aaron Rose, who is part of Grupo Takami, which is a collective of some of the best bars in Bogota, Colombia. She works mainly at a place called Black Bear, but oversees the cocktail menus for several other places. And I am Colombian. My family is from Colombia, and it makes me really excited to have had this opportunity to talk to someone who is creating cocktail culture in my mother's homeland. When I was there last, there really wasn't much of anything. You just drank aguardiente, beer, and apple wine, and you danced a lot. So today, you can drink a lot more than just that. There's still a lot of dancing, and we're going to talk more about all of it with Aaron Rose.
But she's also late, so whatever.
Okay, so she'll text you.
Yeah,
okay. So tell everybody who you are.
Okay, so I'm Aaron Rose. Mm-hmm. I manage the bars for a group of bars and restaurants in Bogota, Colombia.
I love this!
Called Takami.
Yeah! This makes me so happy. Takami, okay.
So I've been there. A few of our bars, obviously with that kind of big of a group, we have some different concepts. One of our best known bars is called Black Bear.
Black Bear?
Black Bear.
Okay.
I moved there about 3 years ago from the Bay Area.
How did you get from San Francisco to Colombia?
So I was working at a bar that specializes in whiskey in San Francisco called Hardwater. It's on the Embarcadero.
Okay. Oh my gosh, you even say Embarcadero like you've been living in Colombia.
I sometimes have moments where I'm like, do I stick with the gringo pronunciation or do I?
You know what? Whatever you're comfortable with, that's it.
We can all speak Spanglish. That's fine.
If you do enough Spanglish, I might start falling into it a little bit. The last time I was in Colombia, when I came back, I was speaking Spanish. Not well, but I was speaking it unaware of the fact that I was speaking it. So that's what you got to do. It's totally fine.
I love that.
Go white girl. Go white girl.
Go Gringa.
So you were in San Francisco at Hardwater.
I was in San Francisco, and a guy that is now a good friend of mine came in, Gabriel Lowe, who's worked there for a long time, and he had actually done consulting on the first, like, more bar concept that they opened, not so restaurant, for this group. But he didn't want to relocate permanently to Bogota. So he was, like, setting them up with consultants from San Francisco. Colombian cocktail culture is still very much in its infancy.
Yeah, for sure.
And so they wanted, the owners had traveled, really cool, all Colombian, but they had traveled, they had lived abroad, and they wanted cocktail programs like they saw in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So they were bringing people down. There had been a couple of people before me who had done, like, consulting stints for them. Mm-hmm. And then, so originally, I was supposed to go down for 4 to 6 months, and I just stayed.
Well, yeah, my experience in Colombia was that, this is the historical, and you will know, I've got my 80-year-old aunt.
Yeah.
We go to see some salsa, because we're in Cali, not in Bogota, but, yeah. You know.
One of the cuñas of salsa.
Right? If you're gonna go see salsa, you got to go to Cali. Sorry, you know. But we'd go there, and she would have her bottle of aguardiente. And we're talking like an actual bottle, not like a little airplane size bottle. Her bottle of aguardiente and a big gulp size beer.
Sounds about right.
Right? And watching the dances, and she's leaning back because, you know, she still moves when she feels like it, but she just has a shot of aguardiente, chases it with the beer. Aguardiente, beer. And does this all night and polishes off the bottle. And I'm surrounded by people 20 years older than me who are all doing the same thing. And so my cocktail culture was like, they've got aguardiente, and that's it. You go down there, you get aguardiente, you get beer. Sometimes you can find rum somewhere, you know. When I was there last, which was about 6 years ago, they found me a bottle of Milagro tequila.
Yeah!
Because they knew I liked tequila. So what is happening there now? What have you seen, and you've been there for 3 years now?
Yeah.
And what have you seen change in the 3 years that you've been working in Bogota?
This is actually a very serendipitous question because I'm actually here presenting Artisanal Colombian Distillates.
I will be there.
Yes!
You are probably not surprised by that.
I'm so happy. With a good friend of mine who really specializes in that, and just to shout out to her for a minute, so she's Colombian. She does beverage pairing for the restaurant Leo, which just became the first Colombian restaurant to make it on the 50 best list, and it's woman-owned.
That's so cool!
I think...
I'm guessing that's in Bogota as well.
Yeah.
Bogota's the Paris. They say it's Buenos Aires, but it's really Bogota.
I love Bogota. I think it's such wonderful and beautiful.
And beautiful.
Doesn't get enough credit for that city.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Amazing. So there we go. Colombia's making moves.
But I mean, there is something very... I don't want to take away the cultural role that aguardiente has in Colombia
because
it's so special.
Yes.
Like, the first time I went to Christmas with my boyfriend's family outside of Medellin, they're paisa, mm-hmm. Or that half of the family is. It's 20 people in a 3-room house, which is an American with lots of personal space issues, was a little intense. But you know, you see this thing that I found very beautiful and so different from how I grew up, which is, even the Mexican culture does not, and that influence in New Mexico, does not have that dancing culture that there is in Colombia.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sitting with my boyfriend's uncles. They're drinking guaro out of like a 2-liter jug.
Yeah.
And then
they make a merengue.
Yeah. And not only that, but when still kind of traditional gender roles, when the women are inside cooking, they dance merengue and salsa with each other.
Oh yeah.
Which for me, like, I loved that so much, like seeing these two 56-year-old men dancing merengue together was like, just because they want to dance, I thought it was so beautiful, that's kind of a side note.
No, it's wonderful. And it actually leads us to the other half of this podcast, which is the music part.
The music part.
Right? Because there's the merengue there, and there's such, my experiences in Colombia have been so musical, but my mom was a dancer.
Yeah.
She was a professional dancer there. She did folkloric dance, but everybody danced, and you know, I'd go there, my cousin's father-in-law was like, Monica, you have to come dance with me now. And I'm like, what? No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not trained this way. And he's like, doesn't matter.
You're dancing.
And he's spinning me around, and he's like, see, you can do it. And I'm like, was that doing it? Did that count?
I know, it's funny, because you're like, I haven't taken classes. I mean, that's very American in a way. And they're like, no, you're dancing.
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Get out there. Doesn't matter. But I think, honestly, like, bar culture in Colombia has had, or cocktail bar culture has had a bit of a hard time, because if you're going out to get drunk, you're dancing.
Yes.
Like, we were at a party last night here in Tails, and it was like, I was like, this is why there's dancing, because when the music's too loud to hear people talk, and, like, everybody's a little tipsy, like, and then they just stand around awkwardly for a moment, and you're like, this is when the dancing comes in, to, like, fill that gap. But I think one thing, like, going back to
retrain some people then on what to do in a bar.
I think so. I think that culture, and it's like in Bogota, there's several very good bars that are very much in the like old school, old man, dark wood whiskey model that are cool bars. Yeah. I would like to see like some things spring up that are like more kind of liminal spaces between like the full on rumba and then like the restaurant bars, which are what our bars are more. Yeah. And they do very well, but they're, you know, bars in restaurants, which is another space too.
So people are, they're used to sitting down and doing
it. Yeah. Okay. And, but I think, to go back to the distillates for a minute, I think, you know, Aguardiente culturally is Colombian. The actual base distillate is not Colombian. They buy it from Ecuador and Bolivia. Mm-hmm. The government-owned liquor monopoly in Colombia has, actually they just signed a law that might make a space for artisanal distillation, but for a long time it's been illegal or semi-legal. Like, you can make Viche, for example, which is one of the distillates we'll be talking about, in the Afro-Pacific communities. That also have really wonderful musical traditions, but like you can make them in those communities, but they aren't allowed to commercialize. And actually, if you go to like Petronio Alvarez in Cali, the big Pacific music festival, you will see people selling DJ everywhere. But those limitations that the government has placed on it to keep their revenue from that. But I think like that's something that's Laura and I are really working on, is like, I don't want to say that the rums that people are selling as Colombian rums right now, they are good rums, they are good quality rums, a lot of them, they are many of them have, they've done like really lovely work blending, but if you're not distilling in Colombia, I'm sorry, that's not Colombian.
It's not Colombian rum, no.
And I feel like that's dishonest and not representing the country like in the right, I mean, it could be a beautiful rum, but it's not Colombian cane, it's not Colombian rum.
You're so pro-Colombia for not being pro-Colombia. I love this about you.
But so, I think that's also a very Bay Area, like local.
You know what? You're actually right, because we're talking about, since you lived in the Bay Area as well, and you came from New Mexico originally. Were you from like a small town in New Mexico?
No, I'm from Albuquerque.
From Albuquerque. But it's still, it's not like LA, you know?
No, it's, so, it's 600,000.
Yeah, so you're coming from places where identity is just normal. Like having, or like having your own brand, your personal neighborhood brand, your whatever, is just normal. It's it's not, I don't want to say small town feel, it's just community feel. And then you go to San Francisco, where it's the birthplace of farm to table, and then that's even more important. So you going to Colombia, I think Colombia is having kind of identity issues because they've only been out of the drug wars for like 15, 20 years maybe. And they had to come out of that and be reborn. Because before the drug wars, it was civil war for a really long time. So a lot of these, like Medellin, for example, has completely reinvented itself as this amazing architectural, you know, mind hive of a place. You know, Bogota's like, we are sophisticated and beautiful. We're not just the gold museum. And, you know, Cali's like music and dance. Everybody's got their thing, and they're really getting it out there in the world and want everyone to see we're beautiful, we're safe. Come here. So I would think that they would be jumping on board with the national pride thing outside of just soccer. Yeah. You know? It isn't just football. Come on,
it's
you guys.
It's not just hummus.
Yeah. There are other people. So, yeah, but I love that you're going down there and embracing that so much. When did you start bartending?
I started bartending, well, I worked in restaurants, like, even all through university. I studied something else, but, like, I mean, I started working in restaurants when I was 16, and then I started bartending. I had a different kind of job for a while after I got out of university, and I didn't like it. Went and traveled, came back, and was like, oh, I need money, and I know how to work in restaurants. Let's start that again, right? So I started bartending in New Mexico, where I grew up, when I was back there, and now it's been about 8 years. So that was, like, I started when I was about 25.
Wow, so you've only been bartending for 8 years, and in that trajectory, you went New Mexico to the Bay Area. And did you work at Bourbon & Branch? Did I read that somewhere?
Yeah.
Which is, like, not too shabby, you know, to go over there and work at that, because that, like, that bar more or less launched the craft cocktail thing in San Francisco.
It did. And I think a lot of bartenders still have, as much as, like, I think there have been a lot of evolutions away from that kind of, like, speakeasy model.
Yes.
And Branch itself has evolved because, I mean, when they opened, it was very much like a boys' club, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, I mean, my friend Didi is the first female general manager of Branch right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I started working there, that was the first time they had more than one woman behind the bar there. I got to work with, like, all these wonderful women. But I think as much as it's maybe evolved away, or the cocktail scene is evolving away from that, like, speakeasy style of bar, every bartender I know that is doing cool things now that worked in San Francisco, almost every single one of them has worked at Bourbon & Branch or one of the bars
one
from
of those,
Future.
Yeah.
Like, their
they're formative experience.
Yes.
And the other thing is, if you want to learn to do volume, I mean, when you start at Branch, they put you in the library. You're by yourself. Yeah. You don't have a bar back. There's no cashier. There's no host. And if 200 people come in, you're making cocktails for 200 people
obviously not all at once.
By yourself.
You're pretty.
So you really learn to manage your time.
You're very well trained yourself. Yes.
And I think no matter what you go on to do or what, that's valuable training.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Absolutely. Absolutely. So then you did all of that and then got whisked away to South America. And so how does that... So you're in a restaurant bar. Well, you oversee a lot of bars. So
yeah, we have
13 restaurant bars. So, but that still can be pretty high volume.
Yeah,
because you've got all those folks coming and sitting down.
Our busiest bars do between. I mean, depending on the month, there's definite waves in Bogota for. Mm-hmm. But our busiest bars do between 2,500 and 4,000 cocktails a month, which is not bad.
That's a lot. That is. And this goes back to Colombians do like to drink, but they. Have been drinking very limited items, you know, basically for such a long time, and they do like to dance. So, do any of your bars have dancing or no?
No. I mean, they're still very restaurant, but I think, but I wasn't there then, so I guess I feel like I'm not bragging about myself, but
okay.
Black Bear was really the first successful craft cocktail bar in Bogota, even though it is a restaurant. But I mean, like, half the sales are drinks, so that's, it's
so
a
bar.
So
people are going there and they understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, one, Gabe, when he helped them design that program, was very intelligent about, like, what he picked to put on the menu.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, not only that, but what's the music program like in these places? What are you guys playing in there?
It depends. Well, Black Bear, we have, like, a good mix of, like, soul, also some salsa. Like, I mean, you know, more upbeat, like, but very, it's
when
a little bit
soul,
older
though, is
crowd.
It, like, American soul?
Yeah, there's some of that in
really?
There, too. We have someone who does a playlist for us. Uh-huh. And then, actually, we had a restaurant that we recently closed to remodel called Segundo, where I did the whole program that went well, and I actually did some playlists for Segundo. And then Cantina Punto, which is our other restaurant where the bar really moves. I mean, tequila, agave spirits are taking off in Bogota, like, everywhere.
Yay, I'm so proud.
Yeah, me too. And also the chef that did that restaurant with us, he doesn't live there full time, but he's a co-owner and he designed that. He was the first Mexican chef to receive a Michelin star. He works in Madrid. So, like, that's really special, Roberto
that's really
Ruiz.
Cool. Really cool.
Also
really cool.
A really awesome guy. So, like, the music there is obviously, like, more, but a little more upbeat Mexican music, but also a lot of Colombian, like, Bomba Estéreo, Colombian kind of party chill music.
What? I'm trying to think. Today's Wednesday, right?
Uh-huh.
Today's Colombian Independence Day.
No, it's Saturday.
Well, I mean, it's Saturday, but today a lot of people are doing the parties, at least back in Los Angeles and everything.
Oh,
I realize there are actually bars doing it, and you said Bomba Estéreo, which, you know, in the States, if you're like a hipster kid, that's the band that you know. Oh, they're from Colombia.
Oh,
you know?
Bomba Estéreo,
But what other music have you discovered since you've been there that you're like,
oh my God, music is totally changed.
I'm sure, right? I remember when I was a kid, my mom had all these great records she brought from home. She'd still find imports of them because she still taught Colombian folkloric dance in the United States when she first came here. And so one thing that was really interesting to me about her records was that the music that was on them didn't reflect the album covers at all, because at that time the album covers were just like really hot women in bikinis.
Yeah.
All of them. Because you'd go through and be like, she's cute, and buy the record. And that was how they sold
the
record.
That was the marketing.
Yeah, so it's
some things are timeless.
I know it's changed somewhat. But so you've discovered things. How have you discovered music while you were there?
I mean, it's a mix of a lot of, I've been lucky enough to travel or sought out, although I haven't been to Cali yet, that's sad. But
you'll get there, don't worry.
I'll get there. I sought out music, and then I think also, like, I gotta give a shout out to Spotify as much as it's like, but I think like you find one song that you hear a song in a restaurant that you like,
Spotify,
and you start to arm a list, and then it starts to suggest things, and I find that, I mean, their algorithm is quite on point.
It is good.
Yeah, and so, like, that's helped, but it's also, like, there are DJs in Bogota that specialize in. The other thing that I've, like, a music that I started getting into were electronic remixes of cumbia and
the
other...
The electric cumbia thing.
Yeah.
That really took off in Buenos Aires. Like,
yeah, King Koya was...
Totally. I know these bands because it was Zizek, I think, was the label that was a big one for that.
Totally.
And I remember what's interesting is that cumbias, and you may have learned this while you're there, cumbias were the poor people music.
Yeah.
You know, but in Colombia... That's all the folkloric stuff is cumbia based because they all tell stories. A lot of them are storytelling. And my mom loved, she listened to her cumbias, but she also listened to Outlaw Country here. And once I understood Spanish, I realized why. I'm like, it's gangster music. It's totally gang. It's all about these guys that are like, I'm going to find that girl. I'm going to take, we're going to get drunk and blah, blah, blah. And it made me laugh. So the electric cumbia thing, when that started up, it made me, that, I thought it was funny because it was coming out of Buenos Aires initially, who are the snobbiest of South America. Yeah. But they were like totally adopting. Sorry, anyone from Buenos Aires, but you know you have that reputation. But anyone.
And you know you do it.
You
sometimes.
Know you do it. You know you do
just
it.
Just chill it out.
My mom was just saying, you might get it. People from Argentina are people who speak Spanish, eat like they're Italian, think they're French, and speak Spanish. That was like the saying.
It's a good saying.
Except she says it in Spanish and it sounds much better.
Always. So,
but yeah, so the electro cumbia stuff you fell into.
And then I have a shirt that I was wearing yesterday. It says Bailemos Cumbia. Like, I really
Who are some favorite artists of yours? If you're going to like gringo to listen to something outside of their comfort zone.
Well, starting with electro, I mean, King Koya, I think, is like a really great jumping off point. He does a lot of Mexican folk music. I mean, yeah. Good job curating.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's actually, remember if he's British or gringo, but like
I think he's British.
Yeah, I think so too. He comes to Bogota a lot.
I think he lives there like half the year, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
And, but he has a list of like Colombian cumbia classics, I think related to marijuana on Spotify, or like that he curated, I think he digitized from vinyl, but they're all really, really good songs. There's this one that I was listening to yesterday. Let me show you in my
head. I know, I'm like, you better send me a screenshot of that, because I'm going to want to remember.
But there was actually, yeah, and like you said, in a lot of ways, I think it's also like the very early jazz in this country. It is, I mean, they're singing about drugs, they're singing about being poor, they're singing about heartbreak, and, but this one,
it's always fun when you find old drug songs.
Yeah,
you
know? El porro es hermano de la cumbia. And then he talks about how the notes of his songs, because you know cumbia originated in Colombia on the Caribbean coast and like in the by the Magdalena River, and that's also coca growing territory. Along there. And he says my notes come from the coca colombiana, and like it's a really beautiful.
I know my mom's stories about coca is we would get headaches, and my mom would just boil a couple leaves into a tea, and then our headaches would go away. I'm like, yeah, I bet they would. But it's different, you know? I mean, in that version of coca, it's just a plant. It's just a medicinal plant.
Well, actually, in my cocktail session tomorrow, I'm going to be using coca in my cocktail, though I didn't.
There we go.
And this is actually hand-harvested. They toasted by hand, and in this particular indigenous community in the Santa Maria Mountains, only the women can touch it. So hand harvested.
We are such good friends right now.
By women.
I am like crashing on your couch in Bogota. Just FYI.
You're welcome anytime.
It's happening.
I have two dogs. So
totally good. Okay. I love dogs.
Good.
So good. And I don't have pets right now, so I can like live vicariously.
I have a couch that folds out, so you'll be
perfect. this made me think of something. The coca leaves, the women. Oh, I forgot. Okay, we're going back to music.
Go back to
music. So I've got a screenshot of this thing that you love. So if you were running your own bar, like, I mean, I know you oversee all this stuff. What kind of music would you be playing in there?
I mean, I think I would really, and actually my bartender said, so, you know, the class system in Colombia and Latin America in general is very pronounced, and which is a gap I would like to close a bit.
It's still like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slowly
but surely. And the first night I put on, and I mean, some of them were traditional songs, but the first night I put on electro cumbia remixes or other songs. I mean, even just songs with the lyrics in Spanish. Like Odessa has a really great song with the Shamanas, where they're singing in Spanish, but it's Odessa doing the beat.
Really
beautiful.
Nice.
And And I put on this music that was all in Spanish, and my bartenders were like, yes. Like, because in a lot of our restaurants, we play or we play a mix. But except for the Mexican restaurant, a lot of the times we're playing English language music because the, like, high classes in Bogota, they still have that thing about, like, European and American
is being better.
Is better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like, we want gin and whiskey. And I'm like, no, you're going to try beach.
Yeah, right?
And Laura is
proud of what you have here. And actually, that's a really good point, too, which could lead towards that maybe they're not embracing some of that stuff because it's seen as the common thing.
The poor
or
people's drink.
The poor people's drink. The thing, they drink out in the jungles, you know, whatever, and they're up in the mountains and all this kind of stuff, and not having respect for that. It's like cumbias. It's changing the culture behind that, the mind thought behind it. That's so interesting.
I think so. I would really, that. I mean, I'm sure I would play. My dream. Have you been to Limantour in Mexico City?
No, I haven't. No, they've come to the States.
They're here right now. Yeah,
yeah, they're here right now. And they've come to the States, so I've had their drinks in that way. But I actually haven't been to Mexico City in, like, 15 or 20 years.
Oh, you should go.
I know.
One thing I really... And I think part of their success that... You know, like I said, a lot of the cocktail bars in Bogota right now are, like, more sedate. And I think a little bit, like, older or money
it's
crowd.
It's a sophisticated thing right now.
But I would really... Like, one thing I think Limantour does really well is, like, they formed a really strong international community around that bar. Like, the way they do guest shifts, the way... And then you go in, and it's, like, that point just before rumba. Like, sometimes they have DJs. They play a really wide variety of music. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, there's space for, like, a lot of different... And I would like to see a bar like that open. Or I would like to open a bar like that in Bogota.
That would be amazing. And that's the place where you would do it because that's the most cosmopolitan of the cities, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's open to more expats so you can cross more borders in a
Well,
sense,
and the expats
musically
are,
and drinks.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And the expats or the people who are visiting from abroad, they are often looking for Colombian.
Yeah.
Like, I have a friend who has a really wonderful restaurant called Mesa Franca. Mm-hmm. He serves ceviche at his bar. And, you know, like, that's the people who come to visit are so stoked on that. The foreigners want to try those things with that story
and
that tradition. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I mean, and I think ceviche is a really special case even in the world of craft. I mean, it's still finding its feet because this is something, I mean, made in the Afro-Pacific communities traditionally. Some of the indigenous communities too, but I think the tradition really came from. And a lot of those communities were founded by escaped slaves that ran from the Caribbean to the Pacific Coast. They're in parts of the Pacific that you cannot reach by land. You have to go by boat or plane. And they have... traditionally, the women were distilling, which is amazing and so unusual in the world of distillates in general. Mm-hmm. Now it's, I think it's about 50-50, but you still see a lot of times where it's like the women who make those and then also do these infusions that are medicinal with that base distillate. And I just think like that's so special, all of that story.
It's amazing. Yeah, and people should be proud. But it is, there's that stigma still. Maybe because, and anyone listening, if you're a Trump person, I don't apologize.
Yeah,
I'm really hoping that our current, president is maybe people not want to be quite like the United States in the same way they used to be. I've been told to go home, and I'm like, what, to San Diego? I love San Diego.
I'll
you
go
can
home
tell me to go home anytime. But yes, yeah, so you know, be proud if you can be proud of your country, and there's a lot in Colombia to be proud of. I mean, there's bad stuff too. We all have bad stuff, but grab onto the good stuff.
Good stuff.
And let's highlight the good stuff.
Highlight.
Speaking of good Colombian stuff, Lulo.
My favorite, one of my most popular cocktails is with Lulo.
Good. It should be. Lulo's like only in Colombia, right? I mean,
I think they have varieties of it like creeping up into Panama and Costa Rica. But the way it is in Colombia, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so Lulo, for you listeners, you won't know this unless you know someone Colombian or who's been there, is a citrus. Basically, it's not even
citrus. It's in the tomato family.
Is it tomato?
It's a solanaceum.
No, it is not.
I mean, it's not a tomato, but it's in that family. If you cut it open, it kind of looks like
one. No, it does look like one. I tell people that. I'm like, it's like orange on the outside, but green on the inside. Like,
and it has those seeds. And
it has those seeds. I'm like, it's thick.
The cool part is called placenta.
I'm sorry. Is it? I didn't even know that. All I know is, to me, it's a fruit. But it's always been like, when I go there, I'm just like, Lulo. All I want to eat while I'm here is Lulo. Just give me nothing but Lulo.
It's the best.
It is so delicious. And so, you going there, so you've gone to Colombia and you've discovered so much. You're discovering these spirits that, you know, no one else has ever heard of because they're being made, like, it's almost like Mezcal was for a long time, or like Bacanora, you know, Bacanora is like, we just made this in the village and then we poured it into our Jeep and then we drink it, you know.
Yeah, at our parties.
Yeah, totally. And I do have family friends who have done that in their life. They used to smuggle Bacanora back for us to drink.
And no, so I had to bring my spirits for my tasting in like 3-liter Coca-Cola.
Right?
Like the plastic ones.
You're like, don't know the legality. realities. Let's just play it safe.
Yeah.
It's over. By the time anybody hears this, she'll be long gone. You can't get her. But yeah, it's like there must be some amazing fruits and herbs, and there's so much fruit in Colombia.
Yeah.
And so many great vegetables and herbs. You must have had so much fun creating drinks with these. Like, what was that process like for you?
I mean, I think it is an ongoing
process. Yeah, I bet.
And actually, there are a lot of, not a lot, but I have friends now that are kind of working. Some of the rare Colombian fruits that only come in a season or only are from a certain climate are disappearing a little bit because of the commercialization of agriculture.
Yeah.
And so I have a friend who runs an Instagram account called Frutas Colombianas.
Really?
Worth following. And
I'm
he
totally
really
down.
Wants. and he's starting to work with like doing tours with bartenders. I think one thing I had to really adjust in my mindset, but it was good. I mean, I think limitations are a learning opportunity a lot of times, or for creativity.
Yeah.
You know, in Colombia, you're playing with really big brands because they're the only ones who can afford to come in.
Yeah.
You're not going to have, like, that mezcal that, like, one person makes at his house.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not coming into Colombia yet. I would love it. I mean, when I first got there from San Francisco, I was really sad about that a little bit. But
you adjust.
I think you have to make the best of what you have. And the other nice things about working with big brands in those markets is like, you know, they took, for example, Omeka Altos took 10 of my bartenders to Mexico this year. Some of them had never been on a plane.
Oh, wow.
So like,
that's amazing.
That's
so cool.
San Francisco has a very wonderful and specific culture that can be very black and white.
Yeah.
I think you move abroad and you kind of learn.
Oh, you know what? I was just about to say, the world is really small once you get out into it.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like it's big and daunting and scary, but if you actually get out there and travel, you find the similarities. You find what people have in common. Yeah. You learn about other people, and that makes us all better.
Totally.
I think it raises everything. It's wonderful.
That's
and
true.
Like you were saying, I'm one of those people, too, when I go somewhere, I'm like, I want to see what you have.
Yeah.
What is your city? I know my city. I don't want to come here just to have the same thing in a different city.
Yeah.
You know, which is why when I was traveling, like in the late 90s, I remember the Burger King starting to pop up places, and I'm all, I do not want to go to McDonald's. I am trying to get away from McDonald's, you know? What's your version of McDonald's? That might be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be amusing to see.
Well, and now that that's the world, I mean, you go to like major cities in a lot of places in the world, and the city center is like Zara. It's like all kind of the same.
They all
so
the
I
same
think
thing. You start to lose the personality.
Yeah.
You know?
But and I think fighting for those local, but you also have to kind of do it in the way that you can, because I don't think that fight looks the same everywhere. But one of those,
it's true.
I've been pushing myself to use more and more local ingredients. And then the other thing is like also push it, like the new menu we're gonna do at Campini Punto, our Mexican restaurant. Mm-hmm. Every bartender that works there is going to have a cocktail or two on the menu.
Oh, that's
and I
so
gave
cool.
them the challenge. Yeah, I was like, and also with Mexican flavors, those fruits work really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, guys, like, I want you using local stuff. And sometimes they have knowledge that I would not have from growing up. And, you know, like, they bring me, like, a really beautiful maracuja. Oh, that's the other thing. Passion fruit is one word in English. There are like 100 kinds of passion fruit. So maracuja is one type of passion fruit.
Yep.
You know, they bring me this really beautiful spin on a margarita with maracuja, which is quite acidic. And then like a cacao salt rim.
Ooh,
like,
interesting.
One of them made a spicy cocktail with tomate de arbol, which you know.
Yeah.
That literally means tree tomato. It does taste like tree tomato. And I think that process has been really fun for me learning. And then also pushing, like, I've been to the Amazon twice this year. I started trying to do... The other thing is Colombia, because there's food all year round.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, generate... That's not the right word. But it's got a lot of abundance in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something growing. Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot of traditions of food preservation or fermentation.
Yep.
And I think, like, also working on that to conserve
incredibly
some
fresh
of
and organic food there.
All the time.
Incredibly. All the time.
And so, but I think, like, those traditions for, like, this fruit only comes once a year in the Amazon in June. Let's save it. Like, I think those traditions, now people are working on that, but that traditionally hasn't existed as much because it's, like, you eat it when it's there. But you'll literally see there's fruit all over the ground that isn't used because,
There's
the
so
earth
much
there
everywhere.
Is. Yeah. Which is really wonderful because, like, I was just in a seminar about sustainability, which was really awesome. But, you know, they're talking about how, like, unsustainable, like, for New York bars, like, using limes are.
Is that
and
Claire?
I'm like...
Is Claire Sprouse doing that?
Yeah. And it was wonderful. Yeah. But it's, like... That for me, I had to have also like a paradigm shift because like for us, like cane and lime and all this stuff that's so essential for bartending.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, I think that's really what I would like to work towards and what I've talked about with Lau and I've talked about with other friends who work in South America is that I feel like South America is working to develop its own cocktail culture that it's not like we're trying to replicate what American bars do, but there are only three vermouths in the whole country. But like, there's so much abundance here. Like,
we can do things with this. What are we going to do with this?
And I mean, I think the thing is it's not replicable in the way like a penicillin, which we have on, like, would be. But maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Totally okay.
Like, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, if I ever move back to the U.S. and try to do a bar program, I'll lose, like, 90% of the recipes I made.
Totally.
But
you just can't get those ingredients.
But that's fine.
And if you do find Lulo, it's Goya pulp Lulo, and it's not quite the same.
It's not quite the same.
Well, we've hit about a half hour, so I wanted to ask you, I'd like to ask people, when you're home, chilling out, relaxing, or maybe you're just sitting on a sweltering balcony like we are right now, because this is Columbia-esque, Columbia light here. Are you having a sip of anything? Are you listening to anything? What's your wind down kind of?
I love...
Oh, what's your party thing?
Oh, those are both good questions.
They're totally different.
They're totally different.
You're drinking your song for your party or for your chill?
I think chilling at home, it's probably going to be... smuggled mezcal, and I'm really into the like lo-fi hip-hop instrumental playlist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so all that SoundCloud stuff.
Yeah, where it's just like beats without the actual, and really chill. And then I think that's very good at home music. And then out and about.
Out for the party.
I mean, I think I've become more Colombian than I'm like, can we dance to this? If not, I don't want it. I grew up to hip-hop, so that's, but... You know, I think gotten better.
Are
with
you
salsa.
Having like aguardiente beer and hip hop? Then is that your
dancing? And maybe, but now it's like salsa. You know, this is another thing I love about Colombia is like there's not that same. You know, like I think Americans we can be like if it's not my perfect music, I don't want to dance. And Colombians are like whatever.
I know.
Like, and I think I've gotten a little more that way, which is nice. Like salsa, great. I've started to like reggaeton after many years of resisting.
Oh, my mom hated reggaeton.
Yeah. She's
like, this is not okay. When that came around, she's like, oh, it's so dirty. It's this. She was not into it.
But you know, I was listening to this.
But she still goes Spanish pop. That's sort of fun.
I was listening to this cumbia song called Rumba Cha Cha Cha.
Rumba Cha Cha Cha.
And I realized that when they did Peligrosa, that J Balvin song, they kind of took a line from that cumbia song, and I was just like, this reminds me of the sampling from, I don't know, it was really nice. It's always
it's
nice
respectful.
To broaden your horizons.
Totally.
But basically, if it has a beat and it makes you feel happy, I probably am chilling.
You are becoming Colombian.
Yeah, I am.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't listen to as much punk music as I used to. That was my New Mexican dive bar days. But it's still in there somewhere.
It is. That never leaves you. Thank you so much, Erin. It was really fun sitting here talking with you. I can't wait for your seminar.
I'm so glad
you're coming. So excited. All right, on that note, we shall say... Oh, wait, no. Your Instagram, your social media, how do people find you? What should they follow if they want to, like, live vicariously through your whatever?
My Instagram is alcoholerin.
Alcoholerin? Like, I ain't hollering at you.
Yeah,
okay.
Alcoholerin.
Alcoholerin. That's awesome.
Or awesome. I guess a lot of people read it as Alcohol Erin, which is also fine. But
is it spelled
E-R-I-N? Yeah.
Okay. Oh my God, that's awesome.
So,
So
and if you come to Columbia,
Gross,
anyone.
Again. And then come to Columbia and
hit me up.
Just have to find you at one of the various bars.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful. Is there a bar we should follow? A restaurant on Instagram?
You
or
can follow. Well, the group,
the group has one.
That's Somos Takami.
Somos Takami. T-A-K-A-M-I.
And you can also follow Black Bear Restaurant. Or Black Bear Bogota.
Black Bear Bogota. Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mom.
You may have picked up during the course of that interview that we did it in New Orleans at Tales of the Cocktail last summer. Yes, I held on to this one for quite some time because this time of year, the holidays, are especially fun in Colombia. They have sort of a version of Carnival. It's called Feria. It takes place in various cities at various times around now. And the last time I was in Colombia was actually in Cali, where my family is from, for Feria. And it was so much fun. There was so much dancing and so much music and just a really wonderful time. So it seems appropriate that we should celebrate the holidays with a little bit of Colombia. At least I'm going to. So thanks for tuning in today. And again, go to the Facebook page, Mo Herms on Facebook, to get more info about, you know, where, you know, her Instagram, the Instagrams, all of that, the Facebooks, etc. And of course, you know, we're on Instagram too. So you can find Music and Booze with Mo there. And then, of course, her playlist will be over on the Facebook page. So thank you so much, Erin Rose, for giving me such a bit of your time for such a special interview. And I can't wait to go to Bogota and visit. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SheBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.